Then we had Nibbly in his win and his little post up, his shark impression, I guess, at the land. Dear Lord, on that one, he puts his hand up like he's a shark fin. I think he calls himself the shark of Mencina. I don't think people should be. It was maybe one of the worst post ups since Contador's little pistolero. Welcome to episode 8 of Between Two Wheels podcast. This is your host, Tyler Yonke, and thank you for joining us today. Today, we're going to go over the Vuelta a España stage 3 results and highlights, and then do a little stage 4 and 5 preview. Just a little side note of humor. My son goes to an undisclosed school, 6th grade, and they had sent out an email indicating that they were not going to let the kids outside for fear of them burning their eyes. Matter of fact, they even have where the kids go to different buildings and cross over different periods, and they were going to have adults sitting outside to make sure that these kids were not nefariously looking up at the sun. So anyway, what we decided to do is just keep him home for the day, and he was able to, well, for the first part, and he had the little glasses on. He saw the eclipse. But this school is also one that sent out a memo earlier in the year about scary clowns. Anyway, you can see where I'm going with this. Okay, let's just get to bike racing and stop with this stuff. Okay, so yesterday we reviewed stage 3 and indicated there was going to be 3 categorized climbs, but that it ended on a 7-kilometer downhill run into Andorra. And that's obviously, I predicted that you weren't going to see much of a GC battle, but you may see some big losers missing out. Kind of a mix of what happened there, and we'll get into that. So the day started off, has a long gradual climb for the first 30 kilometers, and you immediately have a breakaway of, I think, 4 joined in. David Villilla of Cannondale Drapac, Anthony Turgis, Cofidis, Fabricio Ferrari, Kaji Rual, and Thomas DeGant of Lotto. A little bit later, they were joined by 2 teammates of the AGGR team, Axel Dumont, Alexandre Ginez, and then Fernando Orjuela of Postobon, the Colombian team. So on the slopes of the second Category 1 climb, around 30 kilometers in, the brakes split, and this Ginez of AG2R goes clear, and Villela of Cannondale ends up coming across. The Cannondale rider had already collected some early KOM points on the first climb, and so he was poised to take over the KOM jersey, much like Cannondale was able to do in the Tour de France. And then, as long as they can make it over the last Cat 1 climb to the finish. On the way up, back in the field, the visuals of the road were reminiscent of like a Tour de France stage where Team Sky was basically driving the pace. I didn't see them do that a lot last year in the Vuelta, kind of just running on other teams. Then you had Rui Costa and his teammate Atapuma to get a small gap on the climb, and it seems to like spur on Team Sky to just ramp up the pace at more of an inferno type pace. And then on the descent of the Cat 1, the last second to last category climb, the group was all together, and then the break was reeled in with Costa and Atapuma, but they stayed on the front as Team Sky basically queued up from behind. Right before the start of the Cat 2 finishing climb, the group rolled through, and there was a last sprint spot of the day. Now, this sprint line had a time bonus available, and at the very last second, you just see Chris Froome jump ahead and snag it. This should have basically signaled to everyone else some sort of warning bells going off that, hey, pay attention. This is Froome all jacked up for this stage. Maybe they were paying attention, but on the last climb of the day, the Category 2, and it was a shorter kilometer, 3-4 kilometer climb, but it did not start out with enormous damage. Contador came undone right away. You had already seen Rowan Dennis and Bob Jungels distance on the last Cat 1 climb, and soon then the field was whittled down to 10 or 15 and just started to get going up and up. Then you saw Esteban Chavez was hanging around the Team Sky train. He looked like he was having no trouble holding the pace. In the front group, you also saw TJ Van Garderen and Nicholas Roach of the BMC team. As I said, Rowan Dennis had been popped off earlier, so now those guys were looking to basically take the overall leader's jersey. All they had to do was stay in contact and keep Froome from getting any more bonus time, because there were bonus seconds offered at the finish as well. About midway up the climb, Froome then attacks, and only Chavez was able to tag along. Froome does one of those, legs out, frantic looking things that he goes, and Chavez looking smooth on his wheel. The group starts to splinter throughout. Nibbly gets distance right away. And then right before they came over the top of the climb, Froome just has a little bit of a gap. and they start to distance TJ Van Garderen. And then you see Roux and Bardet start to try to claw their way up to Froome and Chavez. So then on the descent, you have Chavez and Froome in the front, Roux and Bardet trying to connect to him. And Roux was actually looking amazing going down the climb, down the descent. Usually you see Bardet taking all the risk and being able to distance people himself, but he seemed to be having actually a hard time connecting with Roux. Near the end, Roux and Bardet connect with Froome and Chavez. About 2K, I think, to go. You get TJ Elson coming into the group. You get Nicholas Roach coming in. De La Cruz, Nibali, and Pozzovivo. They all join the fray. Then Roach tried to lead out the sprint from around the last corner, about 200 or so kilometers. I mean, it's meters to go. But Nibali then jumps off from the left as you're looking at him. So I guess it was the left-hand side of the group. And he was able to hold off the climbers as they tried to do their best Cavendish impression, sprinting for the finish. Froome, though, ends up coming in third, and he got himself more bonus seconds, which actually elevated him into the overall lead by 2 seconds over De La Cruz, a quick step. Then you had Roach and TJ also at 2 seconds. So that was your overall GC. So now you have Froome taking in the lead. A few little highlights from today. Froome's attack was pretty strong, and it actually looked really good. Chavez was actually impressive to be able to hold on to it. And he looked, like I said, he looked very smooth. You go, he's looking a contrast to Froome as far as a rider goes, but everyone else looks more smooth than him. But I was just saying, as far as Chavez looking smooth, he was able to, boom, grab the wheel, and he didn't look like he was suffering to hang on. He didn't have one of those, sitting on the edge of your saddle trying to dig your way back in. Then we had Nibali in his win and his little post-up, his shark impression, I guess, at the land. Dear Lord, on that one, he puts his hand up like he's a shark fin. I think he calls himself the shark of Mancina. I don't think people should be – it was maybe one of the worst post-ups since Contador's little pistolero thing that he should do. I don't think you simply should not do a post-up salute that's tied to your likely self-given nickname. And doing a choreographed little mechanism with a shark fin or a pistol, it's probably the worst thing to see from a bike racer. I don't know if you've ever seen that documentary on NASCAR racing and How to Live as a NASCAR Champ, the Talladega Nights, the Ballad of Ricky Bobby. But I always enjoyed the Cal Naughton and Ricky Bobby doing their absurd shake and bake tagline, mimicking. This is what that reminds me of, prepare the chicken, shake it up, roll back the foil, and this is my presenting my deliciously baked bird. Well, I think they're mocking these types of salutes is what they're doing in that documentary, as I call it. Anyway, the shark of Mancina really rubs me the wrong way. I hate seeing those kind of things. Just post up like a normal person, do kind of cheer you want, but don't give me your little shark thing. And I would say this, although this maybe was better than actually seeing Carlos Sastre. I don't know if you remember a few years ago back in the tour, he won a stage and he puts his actual binky, baby sucker thing in his mouth as he comes across the line. I appreciate you giving your accolades to your children, your wife, whatever, but leave that stuff at home. All right. Or keep it in your back pocket. Anyway, on episode 7 in the previewing stage 3, I did predict that the race might not see the GC guys, come out and show their cards, but rather you might see some GC hopefuls going bust and then, thinning the field out, which we actually saw today. It was a kind of a mix of that because Froome was attacking, so you were seeing the GC guys come out to play, and he obviously was able to stay clear. But we also got a lot of the latter with some of these guys getting kicked in the teeth and on simply the second road stage of the tour. So it's Monday, and we already have several riders completely out of competition. Now, I also said we would never really see the true nature of someone's intent for the Vuelta on leading their team. So, some of these guys, Rohan Dennis, great example. I don't know what his plan was coming in. Was he going for the win? He ended up getting Bob Jungles. That was another one. We don't know what his real intent was. Contador, though. I mean, Contador looked bad. He got dropped early and often on that last climb. Pete Stettina was actually sitting up waiting for him, and he just looked awful. So he could have obviously been done better today. And I can't imagine he comes into the Vuelta, his last race, not ready and, basically not doing it as looking to be an overall winner. All right. So who are the losers today? one, hands down, was Contador. It was the most hyped and the most disappointing result. He lost, I mean, he didn't lose as much as some of these other guys, you know, 2+3 minutes. But as far as what he, how he looked on that climb, and you have others that are holding the wheel of, well, Chavez holding the wheel of Froome. You have Nicholas Roach. You have TJ Van Garderen being able to stay up there. So it is definitely a disappointment for Contador. Rohan Dennis, like I said, losing over 9 minutes. Bob Jungels losing over 7 minutes. Rafał Majka, he lost almost 3 minutes. It's not a thing you'd normally see. I'd also put Joe Dombrowski in there, only because there was a Velo News article that had indicated that Joe was going to be leading his team at this year's tour. And if he's leading the team and then he's over 12 minutes today, that's really not saying much for what his aspirations are. Well, he may be hurt. I don't know, because there was the rumor that he had, well, not the rumor, but indicating that he actually crashed in the team time trial recon. So he may be hurt to the point where it's just not possible for him. Another one was Julian Alaphilippe of Quickstep. He was over 15 minutes down. Once again, I don't know his intent on this race. But losing 15 minutes, he might just be in it for stage hunting. But when he was trying to claw in today and hang on, it looked like someone who was fighting their way and not just, you know, acquiescing due to the fact that they're just not in it for the overall. We still have some hopefuls that weren't up during that finishing group. We have Adam Yates. He only is down 39 seconds. He was in the 32nd group on the road. His brother Simon Yates at 48. Michael Woods of Cannondale Drapac, he has a minute 13. He looks pretty good. He had done well in the Giro as well, as far as mixing it up in there. Wilco Kelderman of Sunweb, he's only a minute 17. And then Ilno Zakarin, minute 29. Louis Menches at 143. And Stephen Kruijswijk at 156. So those guys are still in it with the hunt. You never know what's going to happen. And there's always that chance, especially in the Vuelta, of getting some guy just comes on and you haven't heard about him yet, and he, you know, lights it up and does a ride of his life. I don't think that a ride of your life is going to put you in the high atmosphere, stratosphere of Chris Froome, be able to compete, but you may be able to get on a podium. And so there's always those people we haven't heard of yet. All right, so what do you have coming up? We have stage four, Escaldes. They're still in Andorra, Tarragona. It's 198 kilometers. I tried to look up some of this stuff. This Escaldes, it's once again, it's in this Andorra principality, and the race starts right there from where they finished today. And this finishing town of Tarragona, it's right on the coast, so they're heading straight down south. And there's the profile is basically like a long ramp down. There is a Cat 3 climb in the middle, about at 132 kilometers. And the climb itself starts at 119. So I would expect to see a breakaway, probably being reeled back. You're looking for, you know, the sprinters don't have many sprint stages at all. So this is one of those that could happen. And I, you know, someone like John Degenkolb, who can get over a tough Cat 3 climb and still be part of the mix, I expect him to be, you know, in that mix. You would go in there. Then we're going to do is talk about stage five. It's Benicassim to Ermita Santa Lucia, and it's 176 kilometers. Now, they finished in Tarragona the day before, and then they go down the coast about 170 miles to the Benicassim. And from there, they actually wind their way back inland and then head up north and end up higher on the coast again, but in between stage four and stage five, stage four finish and stage five start. They end in this place, Ermita Santa Lucia, and it's not a town from what I could tell. It's actually just a small church, about 312 meters above sea level. So this is a finishing stage five climb, and they categorize it as a Cat 3, and they say it's a short and steep climb. I found conflicting things online. One says it's about 3.7K with an average gradient of 8.5. With sections of 14 to 20 and then a high ramp of 25%. I also found another one that said it was about 9.7% average gradient. But there are time bonuses at the finish of 10, 6, and 4 seconds. So this obviously can affect the overall. And there's five categorized climbs along the way. There's a Cat 2, and this is how they are in succession. They go 2, 3, 2, 2, 3. And that finishing climb, like I said, it's a little punchy. So look for probably another Chris Froome type day or another GC contender pulling off the win. But I wouldn't also be surprised to see like a solid mountain breakaway stay clear. With all these climbs, it might be a little more difficult for Sky just to go to the front and, you know, stage five and can try to control everything. And if you get enough of these, you know, there's nothing above a cat two, so climb. So you don't have the most difficult climbs, but it's enough to knock a lot of guys out. So you could have, you know, Thomas de Gendt type of day again, where you have a guy that can make it over climbs, make it on a tough day, and be able to stay away just enough where you don't have Sky pounding down on them trying to bring them back. All right, so where are you getting your info for the Vuelta? I wouldn't mind knowing if there's more stuff out there that I haven't been able to see. I'm always looking for good info. I obviously look at podcasts and watch things online. My favorite one is the cycling podcast. I mentioned it before, presented by Rafa. They do a daily recap from the Vuelta itself, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes, and they have good insights. They're actually there on the ground. We have the Between Two Wheels podcast, mine. Hey, say no more. It's what it is, though. I'm not podcasting from the Vuelta itself. I know Cycling News, they do one, but they usually do one about every 5 or 6 days or so. They'll do one, you know, they did one before the tour, do some predictions up until about the rest day, and then they do another one on the rest day to the next rest day and such. I know Velo News probably has like a weekly show. I'm hoping they're going to highlight Andy Hood, their European correspondent. He lives there and reports from Spain, and he is attending the Vuelta, so that should be good. Otherwise, some of their commentary to me is a little more cringeworthy, maybe even more so than this podcast. I know there's a SBS podcast from Australia. I don't know if they're doing anything for the Vuelta specific. They also have Matt Keenan, who does the announcing for NBC on the NBC Gold. He's got his own podcast called Three Domestiques. I think they're on a break right now. They're not doing much, and I haven't heard anything about that Stages podcast either. As far as watching it, I would go off to steephill.tv, and they have great links for all the stages and how to view it. There's links there to the NBC Gold subscription. It's the one I've been using. I use it for the tour. It's a one-time yearly subscription. I get a bunch of races. I get all stages of the tour. I get all stages of the Vuelta. And it's pretty solid. There's another one called Fubo TV. They are offering like a 7-day free trial. It's $19.99, and they said summer special for the Vuelta. But I think they have an ongoing monthly subscription. You get a bunch of other things with it, like maybe some Major League Baseball and other items, but it's kind of a la carte for what you want. You can check that out as well. Then there's always that pop-up fancy bear prone, hacking prone website stuff that you can do, the crazy stuff, the pirated things. And you can find those. Once again, I'd say go to steephill.tv or cyclingfans.com for that. Some of the websites I use to find some good stuff is, once again, steephill.tv. It seems to be, they have a lot. And I'd suggest that for like looking at any of these, you know, go over the highlights, and they have great little clips of highlights, last 5K, some other stuff, some interviews, good stuff there. Same with cyclingfans.com. Pro Cycling Stats is great if you want to find out any rider and their, you know, their immediate results, and going back for several years as well. Obviously, we have Cycling News, VeloNews.com, CyclingWeekly.com has been pretty good. And then one of my favorite, it doesn't post as much, but they are doing a stage-by-stage preview analysis, is the Inner Ring. It's INRNG.com, like Inner Ring without any vowels. He does great analysis on all kinds of things, aspects of cycling. But send me your best stuff, and would like to get more info. One last item I did see that kind of made me laugh, and I just wanted to present it here. Frankie Andreo had a former Lance teammate, that whole doping aspect that he and his wife, Betsy, had testified against Lance. He was a DS for Kenda, several other teams. Anyway, most people know who Frankie is. But he posted here the other day on Twitter, "I once quit La Vuelta in the first 5 days by throwing up on purpose on my team director because the team didn't renew my contract. Hashtag I quit." So then the funny part is, Johan Bruneel starts firing back, and so he says, "But I assume that your team still paid you your salary every month until the end of the year, right?" Frankie actually replies to that one and said, "I had 90 days before the start of the Vuelta, no contract, and yes, Cofidis did pay to the end." Then Johan doesn't want to let it go. He's like, "So your point is that if you have 90 days, you race 90 days and no contract, that's a reason to throw up on purpose and quit the race, but still get paid?" And then he replies back again because he's not getting any feedback on this. Not getting any reply on this simply because there isn't any reasonable one. I forgot to specify. I threw up on purpose on my team director. Anyway, he's obviously still worked up over that. I don't know if he was the director. It was with Kofidis, so it couldn't have been him. But obviously, as a director, Johan Bernil feels slighted, and especially with his ties to Lance Armstrong and kind of his animosity. I imagine it's mutual with him against Frank Andreo. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. We'll be looking for stage four. I probably won't podcast tomorrow about stage four because it's probably going to be a little bit boring. And then we're looking for stage five. Stage five should be the one with that, those climbs in it and the up to the finish. Pretty good. You know, there's just a lot of up going up and down this year in the Vuelta, and I'm looking forward to it. Take care, and we'll talk to you next time.